Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
Back in the pocket for his drop goal attempt. Here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it! That surely is the grand slam.
We target players all the time. That's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton! Wonderful pass and Stockdale finishes.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand Slam winners on St. Patrick's Day at Twickenham.
All right, you're very welcome along to Friday Night Rugby with Brian O'Driscoll. Brian O'Driscoll's here, funnily enough. How are you?
Good, really good.
The Ireland team has been named. We'll get to that in a minute, but... Are you tempted to dust off your boots now that you've seen the Manitou Laggy contract this week?
Well, Tom Brady, 40 is the new 30, isn't it?
Yeah.
With Tom Brady.
So, you've got a bit of time in your hands there.
Yeah, they're nice numbers that are being thrown around. But it's a hard slog too. A little easier in the backs than it is in the forwards in France. But yeah, if you're, what are they talking? 2.5 sterling, so 2.8 over 3 years. Although in a month's time,
that's that, million.
You know, that could, sterling, that could be absolutely reversed. So I don't know. I prefer to be being paid in euros at the minute. Yeah.
850,000 euros a year for Manitou Laggy by Racing. This is the bit where the inflation starts to get a bit crazy, and some teams might go belly up, or maybe this is what the new normal is, and we need to prepare ourselves for it.
So, I suppose it depends on what that business model remains as, and it's, if there's still the Jackie Lorenzettis in Racing and the Mourad Boujalas in Toulon that are willing to take a loss each year, depending on, you know, whether it's good for the ego or whether they actually see a business model. I think Lorenzetti possibly a little bit more so than Boujalas in Toulon sees that whole metro, that new stadium that they've built. You know, there's huge concerts going on there. It's a little bit of an epicenter of the area. Yeah. So, and Racing are just a part of that. So, you know, you need these big guys, these big benefactors to pay big dough, because, you know, if you're paying one guy 825 or 850 grand, the next big name's going to come along and say,
thanks,
am I
much.
Not worth that?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then you talk about bringing the superstars, well, Julian Sevilla, you know, he's had a tough couple of weeks down in Toulon, being absolutely lambasted by his president. Apparently he's getting paid £1 million a year. So,
right.
So the reports are being, or so Boujalas said himself. So, it just seems to be getting more and more inflated, and it wasn't there 5 years ago, let me tell you.
If you're an Irish player now, in the middle of your 20s, are you looking at that and going, I'm going to do my 2 years now, bank the money and then come back to Ireland? Or are you thinking, I'm only going to wait until the end? Like, there's definitely a draw for staying in Ireland, but there's also three times the money available.
I don't know if it's three times the money. I think the top earners are still getting paid very well. They can also probably make something from an endorsement perspective that can top up their income. Plus, they're now thinking, because of how they're looked after, they're getting another year, maybe two at the other end.
So that's the trade-off
okay. as well. And playing for a team that, you know, or an area you've possibly grown up in, not always the case, because, you know, players are now dispersed from different provinces across to other provinces, but there's a strong likelihood that you've been born in the area. They're your team.
Yeah.
And there's pretty good cultures in all four provinces right now, where there's a winning mentality, or there's a feeling that there's a prospect of winning silverware.
Yeah. So, I mean, is this the deal that is going to be the last great deal of the year?
Well, what it might do is you might see players doing that, you know, the Paul Scholes thing of retiring from international at 28 or 29, as opposed to deciding to move at 32 when it's too late. You know, I don't think there's going to be that many Sean O'Brien type deals for other players. I think he's pretty unique. I think he's gotten a great deal and been given a 3-year contract with you know, his injury history over the last year. But potentially you could have, with those big numbers, that you could have players saying, right, you know, I'll sign off at 28, 29, particularly if the cycle of a World Cup finishes around that period, and then go and look at a big three or four years, or potentially more if things go well.
Yeah, and then it's not just the superstars charge of the game. Obviously, it's the kind of middle tier players who are suddenly being offered way more. Maybe they're the ones who will be tempted, who are like on the fringe of an Ireland team. Your depth, your third choice centre or your third choice number seven is suddenly going, they're offering me three times my salary, and Leinster, Munster, Ulster are going, well, you don't have a national contract. It will be up to us to match that. We can't do that.
Well, I think it's almost like a, in a way, a Simon Zeebo type scenario where he wasn't fully sure whether he was part of Joe Schmidt's plans and he just couldn't turn that much of an increase down. Now, he also said that it was for family reasons and he speaks the language and wanted to experience something else. And I think you can, in his case, you can definitely take all of that on board. I wouldn't be so trusting of some of the other comments that are thrown around of players wanting new experience to learn new cultures and so on. When you see the comparables of their numbers. But I take that at face value. So I know lots of people say, you know, Zeebo's exactly what we're missing in the national team, and would he do a job for us? Absolutely so. But I wonder, did he think that he wasn't really going to be a regular in Joe Schmidt's plans, that he wasn't his type of player, and as a result, he pulled the plug a little bit earlier than everyone else coming from the Southern Hemisphere? You see names are starting to sign up now. Ben Smith is coming as a Poe. He's coming to that calibre of player. If you do it when everyone else is doing it, obviously you've got more competition for places. Yeah. It means it drives your number down.
Yeah.
But those middle tier players, if you're on the fringe and you're maybe going to make a World Cup squad, or you're having to really fight it out at a provincial level to get your place, and someone else offers you time and a half or double your salary, it's
for a 2 or 3 year deal.
That's a very, very difficult thing to turn down, because we come back to the whole loyalty thing. Loyalty is a thing of the past. A bookmaker has made a joke of it at the minute.
Yeah.
But it's
a valid
true
point.
from a club and a player perspective that you do have to look after yourself. It's a career. It's short.
Yeah.
And so
do
what works for you.
Yeah, and increasingly short too, as the hits get heavier and heavier. Let's talk about the Ireland team. It has been named. You might have seen this in the paper this morning. The front row is Dave Kilcoyne, Sean Cronin and Tadhg Furlong. The second row, Al Connacht, Ulton Dolan, Quinn Roo. Peter O'Mahony captains the team from 6. Sean O'Brien is 7 and Geordie Murphy is 8. The replacements are Niall Scannell, Jack McGrath, John Ryan, Ian Henderson, Josh van der Fleer, John Cooney, Jack Carty and Andrew Conway. So this is an interesting team.
Yeah, it's nicely mixed up. Some changes, 4 changes obviously. I think a long overdue rest for a couple of players, particularly the likes of Rory Best, who doesn't need those extra miles on the clock. Also, conversely, from an age perspective, I thought James Ryan was badly due a rest as well. He's played a lot of minutes. He's an 80-minute guy, and sometimes he probably needs a bit of protection from himself. So, given how well Quinn Roo did, and then Ulton Dolan when he came on and had a big 15 minutes, I think it's, there's faith restored in both of those, and to be given the opportunity, and then it's timely that Ian Henderson comes back from injury, having missed disciplinary action during the week having been cited playing for Ulster, is a great addition to bolster that bench.
Yeah, and Josh van der Fleer, we kind of wondered if van der Fleer would make a bench, given that he seems like quite a specialist 7, but with Sean O'Brien in the team, you can move things around.
And that's the thing, you don't always get that like-for-like change. So at a push, could Josh van der Fleer play 6? Of course he could, but if O'Mahony goes off, it means O'Brien goes to 6 and Josh goes into to 7. Geordie's ability to be able to play all 3 positions allows for a specialist 7 to come on there. So between them, Josh would struggle maybe at 8, but the fact that Sean and Geordie play at 8, it's a back row that the players could be intermingled and it wouldn't really matter.
Jack Carty is on the bench, which means that the injury profile this week, that Joey Carby had a bit of a hamstring, is what we were told in the aftermath or the press conference today. What that actually means, sometimes the information coming out is who knows. But it meant that once he was gone, there was no chance of Sexton not starting, right? That was, would Sexton have started anyway?
you know, there's all the talk of how little Johnny has played since the new year, 130 minutes or something. You know, it's very small numbers for a guy that has had such a great year last year and that thrives on playing regularly. You know, he's not a guy that likes to pick and choose, cherry pick his games. He does like to play a lot of games. He likes to finish games. But again, he's another one that needs a little bit of protecting from himself, particularly the way we saw him play. And you know, the talk is Richie Murphy was talking in the press saying that Johnny's not going to change anything. He might need to just change it a small bit just to look after himself.
Who has that conversation with him?
I think Joe has it, you know. I think Johnny probably knows it himself, but he's too stubborn to change, you know. But for his own health and safety, just a half a second earlier makes a difference in a collision like that. Just throw it a fraction earlier. The team is so well drilled that, yes, those margins absolutely make something a guaranteed line break. But if you throw it half a second earlier, there's every chance you're going to get a line break as well.
Yeah.
So, the reality is he didn't get to finish the game because he shipped so many knocks, and he won't want to give an opportunity to Joey as well, who came on and responded so well. So he wants to get that number 10 jersey for multiple reasons, for his own sake, for getting game time, but also to keep everyone else at bay.
Yeah, so it's not that much of a change, really. It's like...
Well, no, you look at the back line, it's...
In terms of Sexton's game, when you're saying, like, just, like, sling it a little bit earlier, it's not that much of a change. You're not asking to fundamentally change.
No. He can still take it aggressively to the line, but just a fraction earlier, just protect himself. He left himself wide open, and it's incredibly selfless. That's what it is. And it's brave, it's belligerent braveness. But it's 33 years of age. We need to get him to the World Cup.
Yeah.
And we do want him to play for another couple of years. And if he continues playing like that, I reckon that teams will continue to target him. They'll want him off the pitch because he was the best player in the world last year.
Yeah.
So.
And they can get away with it when he plays that
but
way.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with Scotland. I read today in the paper, you know, after a number of late hits, they were all not illegal hits. They might have been after the ball was thrown, but I don't think you could have.
There's no yellow cards.
There was steadfast. Not a chance. I think you'd have struggled for a penalty in any case, that a player could have put forward a good case that they were committed to each and every one of them.
Yeah.
So he just has to try and brace himself a little bit more for those impacts rather than really selling something to the nth degree where you know, he has to take a collision into his midriff and he's not ready for that shot.
Yeah, and everybody buys it, including everybody in the stadium. Like, oh, yeah, you were getting rid of that ball, turns out. Mm.
He didn't get to sell it. I'm sure he knew that he'd done a great job in Stockdale, but he didn't see him getting to score. He wasn't celebrating with them, so.
No. What about Conor Murray's situation? Lots of talk about his form at the minute and whether or not the right thing to do is to keep him in the team, to let him play his way back and to get him some numbers, minutes as well. What's the right situation with him at the minute?
I think what people have to remember as well, that Conor's been arguably our most consistent player for the last 5 years, himself and Johnny. Since that Lions tour in 2013, I don't think he's looked back. He's been outstanding for Munster, week in, week out, always good for Ireland. And for the first time, he's had a long-term injury, you know, it's a neck issue, and I had one myself. I had surgery, and it fixed immediately. He opted not to have surgery, and it was just a waiting game. But I'm sure he is still carrying it. After a period of time, particularly if you don't have surgery, it takes time to get back in, and it's not match fitness. It's the psychological freedom of being able to play when you feel 100%. And if you're carrying something, it can't help but affect your body language or affect the psychology of how you play your game and impact other areas. And it's so unlike him. Well, he's been with Aaron Smith, the best box kicker in the world for the last 3 years. By a country mile, the distance and the quality and how often Ireland get to compete, and our kick game has been based around that. And yet, it's been way off, and that's not from a lack of practice. That's just something else in his game that is just festering away at him, and he's not fully comfortable about how he feels, and it's having a negative impact. And it's a tricky one, is to know whether to play through that or give him continual rest to be able to look after it, to make sure that it is fully right for later on in the year. But Conor Murray, you know, he's 20, is he 29 now? Like, he's lots of really great years ahead of him too. He's not someone that's you know, coming over the crest of the hill and, no. and down the other side. He's got lots of great years. So it's just a case of him making sure that he can get himself to a comfortable spot of feeling good, and as a result, his natural game will transpire.
Yeah, and he might be a little bit away from that yet, because, you know, the recovery from a neck injury is so... It's not a straight line, it's not a linear thing where you go, okay, you've hit this point, you hit this point, you hit this point, all your strength's back, you're totally fine.
I'm sure you wouldn't mind me saying, I met him the other day, and you can see the difference on one arm versus the other. You can see it, and that will take time. And, you know, I think he's banked so many good years that people just need to have a small bit of patience. We're in a very impatient existence now, particularly with successful rugby teams. We saw it with the England week, that, you know, we turn very quickly, and if, you know, Johnny isn't, you know, playing 9 out of 9.5 out of 10, and Connor's not at that standard week in, week out, you know, we throw the toys out of the cot pretty quickly. I think there's a need just to allow these players to play themselves back into to feeling better and getting minutes under the clock, and just build their confidence back up as individuals and as a collective. Because I do think the Irish team probably took a bit of a confidence dent after that England defeat. Of course you would. You were at home. It was a proud record they had in Six Nations.
Yeah, it was a complete
under Joe
shock.
Schmidt. It was a real shock. So that takes a game or two to get out of your system sometimes.
That's why he's picked this team, isn't it? That's why he's put Murray and Sexton together, and he's not making any of the other significant changes. Because you could, for this game, the way Italy are playing at the minute, you could legitimately make a raft of changes, put players in who have 10 or 12 caps and go, okay, off you go, this is your team, this is your chance. But he hasn't done that. He's picked a team to make sure that he wins this game, and potentially a team that can get a bonus point and remain in the competition.
I think this is a real... This weekend's a seminal weekend in the Six Nations, because ultimately if England win against Wales, it's all but done and dusted.
Yeah.
But Ireland won't. Ireland didn't have the luxury of knowing that result before they picked this team. Yes, they play on Sunday versus England on Saturday. They'll be watching. But what it will do, if England go and win against Wales, I think it'll give Joe Schmidt scope to go and try lots of new combinations in the other two games, knowing that the winning of the tournament is most likely beyond their reach.
Yeah.
Whereas Wales win this weekend, everyone's back in the mix. And if Ireland particularly could get a bonus point victory away from home against Italy, I think that'll put them a point or two behind England, depending on whether they get a losing bonus and so on. So there's still plenty to play for, but I think this is a team picked on two fronts: to still be competitive and win the game, but also to try and drive that confidence. And that's the nucleus of the team, of what we expect. You know, Rob Kearney back there, except for Rory Best. You've got Sean O'Brien in there. You've got, you know, the halfback pairing, guys that are going to be needed, you know, when we come to World Cup quarterfinal time.
Yeah.
And need minutes.
The Jordy Murphy coming in at 8, he's always been a huge fan of Jordy Murphy. There's been big games before where Jordy Murphy gets picked. You think of the game in Chicago where Murphy starts that game. And then obviously he gets injured and is out for a year basically afterwards. But he likes Jordy Murphy.
The Jordy Murphy, the All Black game in Dublin in November. You know, it should have been Sean O'Brien first and then Dan Levy. And Levy gets injured, so Jordy's catapulted in, and you know, Jordy's got a lot of success. He's got, he's got a Grand Slam. He was involved in those two championship-winning years of 14 and 15. He was, you know, a mainstay in the Leinster team, successful team. You know, those early years of success. He was just coming into the setup, so he's got a lot of medals, and he's got a lot. Again, he's got a lot of credit in the bank from Joe Schmidt because he's always delivered for him. So I'm not surprised at all to see him be given an opportunity. The fact, as well, as we were mentioning earlier on, that he plays 6, 7, and 8 equally as comfortably as the next, is a lovely player to have in in your six back rows for a World Cup squad.
He's World Cup squad material, really, isn't
he? I think he is.
And
I think
these games are the bit where it's like, yeah, come on, just you make sure that you are proving to me that you're still who you were, and away we go.
And he's been really good. Like, it was a brave move to go up to Ulster. He felt as though he saw, well, the timing of it, he saw the writing on the wall with Van der Fleer and Levy coming through and Sean O'Brien all being there. And then as that season panned out, you know, he became the number one star. He even started at number eight in the Champions Cup final. Yeah. But in fairness to him, he didn't go up there and think, you know, okay, I'm a mainstay in this team. You know, my performances don't need to be of highest standard. I think he's really driven that, you know, that desire to still play in an Irish jersey and has warranted a selection, because I think I do see him in that World Cup squad later on in the year because of that versatility and because you know, he's impacted. He can impact well off the bench as well. He can bring a real energy as well to multiple positions.
The second rows, Delan and Quinn Roo, they kind of feel like they're vying for a place on the plane. It's teammates, obviously, at Connacht in Ireland this week, but I'm not sure that both of them get to go to the...
No, I don't think they do either. I think if you're talking about, you know, the three second rows, if you're picking from a full deck, you know, I think you're obviously looking at Ryan number one, Toner number two, and at the moment, and Henderson as number three. And then do you pick a Tadhg Byrne who can play in the back row and the second row, which would mean that only one of those two will get to go? I think you're only going to see four second rows, but you just pick four out and out second rows. And even in that case, only one of them will go. Yeah. So is there an outside chance that that both of them don't go? Yeah, but the fact that Tadhg Byrne is fit and not getting game time, I think really spells it out that one of these two are going to be the guys that will be selected for Japan.
Delan had like an explosive arrival on the scene where, you know, there's one mall in particular against England that kind of seems to move when he joins it, and hasn't quite lived up to that explosiveness since. But you can see how he could play himself into form and be a player that everybody goes, ooh, that guy has to be in our team.
Yeah.
Or in our World Cup squad.
Yeah, he stuttered a small bit, I think. He had a huge impact. Was he capped against England, or one of his first caps against England in Twickenham 3 years ago? Played really well in the loss, and there was an expectation for him to really kick on. It didn't happen for him. I think the passing of his mother 18 months ago, I think, really knocked him for six, and it took a long time to recover from that. He's playing himself back into form now. One thing I would say about him, his hands have at times let him down, where he's been a little bit loose into the carry and been stripped or lost the ball in contact, and it's a real pet hate of Joe Schmidt's. You just have to look after the ball. So I think that's why other players, where they might have, you know, they might have a phenomenal strike rate, I think, you know, thinking Connacht winger, who's not Carty, come to me in a minute, Healy.
Yeah.
Another one who, you know, had a phenomenal strike rate last year, and people were wondering why he wasn't in the mix, is because he might have two or three turnovers a game, and you just can't do that. You can't cough that up at international level. And maybe that was where, you know, Joe Schmidt had a word to Delan that he really need to look after that part of his game, and I think he's definitely done that. He's an athlete. He can do damage. He can carry for you. He can be destructive at mall time. So if he can stay fit and do all those basics really well that Joe's looking for, he'll push Quinn Roo hard for that fourth spot.
What about the centre partnership? We've got Chris Farrell back. There was a bit of concern when he played for Munster that he went off early after banging the knee, but purely precautionary, obviously. Bundy and Chris Farrell, 12 and 13. Chance for another partnership to bed down?
Yeah, it is. I suppose it's unfortunate from Tom Farrell's perspective that Chris Farrell is fit and well to play, because, you know, looking at all his stats, he's playing, you know, some brilliant stuff, and everyone felt that there was a cap in him this year. I think Joe knows his four centres. They've kind of formed themselves over the course of the last 12 months. And unfortunately for Tom Farrell, it's a season too late that he's shown this sort of form. But if you look at you know, Chris Farrell gone and Gary Ringrose gone, and Robbie Henshaw gone, all of a sudden, you know, you are going down to picks five and six, and so you never know what's going to happen. And Chris Farrell has been very good this season, just, you know, solid. You know what you're getting, but still nice little touches. So another opportunity for him to bed down a different sort of centre partnership with Bundiaki.
Robbie Henshaw still out with that dead leg that he suffered. I mean, Henshaw's first choice, right? And he's had a new deal during the week. It was kind of not the usual fanfare when these deals are announced. It was almost like taking care of business.
Yeah. I think he is still number one. I think, again, people are quick to write him off, write all his good moments at playing 12 for Ireland over the course of the last 4 years off because he played one game out of position in a losing performance.
Yeah.
Let's not forget all the good work that he does for Leinster and he's done for Ireland. So Bundy probably hasn't, you know, the two games that we've played this Six Nations, certainly against England, not as great as performance in green. But yeah, worthy of another start. So it'll be interesting when all four are fit. I think Gary's the certain starter at 13. But you could see definitely either Bundy or Robbie with him in the centre, don't you?
Yeah, by not being brilliant at fullback, then does that mean that Robbie can't be on the bench? And it's like, no, I'm not a versatility player. You got to pick me from the start, boss.
I think he'll get another go at fullback, Robbie. I think they'll play him there again. I think they still, if Rob Kearney is injured, I think they'll want his security back there, his defensive game, his aerial ability, his kicking game, and he just needs another opportunity in a team that's not going backwards, more of an opportunity to cover some grass.
Well, a full team, it's like who is number 23? So it's Conway this week. We've seen it be various people, and you're kind of like, well, what does he want? If he had everything, if you could have Henshaw as your 23, it's a pretty strong team when Robbie Henshaw is your 23rd player.
Yeah, it is.
Like, you're suddenly very happy going into battle. I don't care if one of you guys gets injured because I'm going to bring him in. They're going to bring him in anyway. So
The reality is, though, that they're not going to have that full deck to choose from come World Cup time. That he won't have that major headache to wonder who, you know, out of all of his best players, is he going to leave out of a 23. The reality is, you know, in the warm-up games, you're probably going to lose one, two, maybe three players. You'll lose one or two in training as well.
Yeah.
So it works itself out. And it's all hypotheticals that we're talking about. But in reality, when the time comes, it'll look very different.
Our rugby coverage is brought to you by Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. Adrian on Facebook says, if nine is considered the fulcrum of the team and Brian says Conor Murray is off form, then isn't it fair to assume the team will underperform? Isn't Conor Murray so good with his experience at this point?
Yeah, like Conor Murray's underperform is still a 7 out of 10 of most of our other scrum halves with respect to them. When they're really on their game, you know, they're better than his 7 out of 10. But for the most part, he's that much better than the others that I think we have to give him an opportunity to play himself into form. What's more important, that the team goes really well, or that our number one gets some confidence, and hoping in doing that the team will be carried along with it. I think you've got to look at both sides of the bigger picture, but also of increasing the confidence of individuals, because he's human like everyone else. He might look inhuman at times the way he plays, and I think we've had the luxury of him being a guaranteed star performer, but he's just a little off, so he just needs to be bought some time.
You've got to assume that at this stage Schmidt is fairly happy with Cooney or Marmion as his backup, and now what he needs is for his 9 and 10 first choice. And I'd say he's pretty happy with Carberry now as a second choice number 10. He's like, you guys just need to get into good form here in the World Cup, because if you're not playing to the full of your ability, we're not going to win the World Cup, and it's all pointless anyway.
Yeah, like it's not, can Ireland still win the World Cup without Conor Murray? I think they potentially can. A lot has to go right, and you can't lose anyone else, but they need a lot of fortune still to go on their side.
Yeah.
But But you look at the impact that John Cooney made when he came on against England. He was very good. Marmion's never disappointed. Luke McGrath was shown brilliant form before he got injured for Leinster. So they're definitely closing the gap. But I do think that Conor Murray has been out on his own with Aaron Smith over the last 3 or 4 years as real stand apart players. And the other players have a lot of catching up to get to that level. But they're getting there, in fairness.
We haven't talked about Italy, but their form has been patchy, even within games. There's been games where they've been completely annihilated and the game's over and they start playing, or they put together a 15-minute spell. It's like, and there's still no wins in the Six Nations for Conor O'Shea. It's a really difficult situation they find themselves in. Like, what type of challenge do you expect them to pose? Is it a real challenge? Is it a 40-minute challenge? Is this game over after 15 minutes?
Who knows? I think they've got a really bad. I was looking at some stats that were sent earlier on. They've got a really bad record at being broken in the first three phases of offset piece, which absolutely plays into Ireland's hands. You look at the Stockdale try against Scotland. You could be sure that Joe Schmidt has concocted something to manipulate their defence. From their perspective, they're not playing against the greatest team if they're porous after three phases. A lot of their scores have come when the games have been dead and buried. You know, they're three late scores.
Yeah.
Scotland just took the foot off the accelerator, and then a consolation score against Wales as well. But it's hard to know. In fairness to Conor O'Shea, I get the sense that it's going to be one of those stories that if he doesn't stay the course, if he decides to leave after 2020 Six Nations, that we will see the effects of what he's done, not maybe immediately in 21 or 22, but potentially in 24, 25. Because by the sounds of things, everything that I'm hearing, and I made contact with him during the week, that there's a lot of politicking still to go on, and you know, headbutting, of decision-making processes that had been in place for a lot of years,
yeah,
to break that up and to change that, and particularly with a different culture, that's not something that changes overnight. And so I think he's going and doing it the right way. Unfortunately for him, he just hasn't picked off the one or two results as well, other than that South African win that you need along the way just for people to get off your back.
Yeah.
And you have to look at the score lines. I know that Scottish score line flattered them a little bit, but they're still, it's only 10 or 12 points against,
nine or 10 points
against Wales. So,
yeah,
like, they're not getting smashed. And I think if they can stay within, again, 10 or 15 points of Ireland tomorrow, it'll be an improvement.
But if they were to deny us a winning bonus point, that would be a real pain, because it's clearly something that we're trying to do. If they win, it's not a victory for them, but it would definitely be the moral victory that, professional players are supposed to hate, but like...
Defensively, they look a lot more organised. They have to be a bit careful on, discipline. They let Wales off to a comfortable 12-point lead without really having to do a whole lot.
Yeah.
Just giving away silly penalties. So, offside, things like that. Even defending together offside,
yeah,
as opposed to on their own.
Yeah.
It's a bad picture. So learn to cheat well together,
yeah,
or don't cheat at all.
Well, I mean, Scotland kind of did the same to us, and no one's saying that they're disorganised rabble. Like, it happens in rugby games where one team, England did to Ireland, I suppose, where we didn't start very well. So that can happen. I just want to move on and talk about one other thing about Ireland before we move on. Rob Kearney is going to continue playing after the World Cup. This was the news that was coming through. The notion that he was going to finish at the World Cup didn't really make that much sense. He's still playing really well. Like, why would he call it a day at the end of this year?
It wasn't coming from his camp, I can assure you. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him for a while. I don't know. Similarly, I would imagine to the Sean O'Brien conversations that, national contracts are possibly not going to be offered with his age profile. He's 33. At the end of next month, so the IRFU does look at cycles, and rather give Jordan Larmour or someone else, even someone like Joey Carberry, who's probably not on a national contract. It doesn't have to be a like for like. It doesn't have to be another fullback.
Yeah.
There's 20 or 21 national contracts, so that's someone it. That's fitting of getting one of those. might come in. And so whether he's willing to take the pay cut that's very likely in Leinster.
No,
I would imagine. Or so he has to start looking further afield, as we've seen with Sean O'Brien.
Yeah, I mean, you presume somebody of Carney's reputation is going to be in demand at this stage of his career. Like,
of course, he's he's had arguably one of the best years of his career. If they're looking for tries, I don't know if he's the guy for the job at the moment. He's on a bit of a barren patch, but the rest of his game is in great shape. He counter-attacked well against Scotland, carried a lot of metres after contact, and nearly always beats the first defender, so very secure at the back. What's not to like of that in a Premiership team, or yeah. I don't know if necessarily a French team, or maybe even further afield, maybe even something down. Not many Irish players have gone down to Japan, but they've got a few quid down there as well.
Yeah, so that'd be nice. Great life experience. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. The Wales-England build-up. The Telegraph helpfully said that they had an exclusive this week that Warren Gatland is now in line for the England job. I was like, this is interesting that the official paper of the RFU basically are tapping up the manager publicly the week of a big game.
Yeah.
Oh, Warren, you're going to come in out here, you're joining England. So that, like, all his players are going, what? Just like nice timing that the Telegraph broke that story this week. Mm. An exclusive that nobody else has backed up just yet.
And, well, I'm genuinely only hearing that for the first time. It is interesting because it's a bit of a catch-22 for him, because he can't be too annoyed if he's really interested in the job, you know?
It's old,
no, I will. Under no circumstance will I be going there.
I'm flattered by the
attention. Until we talk about it on Monday.
It definitely gets talked about in the dressing room, though, right?
I'm sure. If
should he address it? Do you have to bring it in and go, oh, look at this rubbish? And then it doesn't matter. Like, in 6 months' time, everybody's
forgotten. He probably will. And in his own way, I'm sure he'll say that. Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because, of course, he's going to deny it to the hilt. You know, he's going to be bringing them to the World Cup later on in the year. Of course, he's not going to say, I'm giving it some serious thought. I'm down to the last three. No, he's got to refute everything that comes his way until post-World Cup.
Yeah. What's going to happen in this game? We all obviously really need England to at some point stutter if Ireland are going to somehow pull this one out of the fire. But
I don't know about Eddie Jones' comments of best Welsh team he's ever seen. I don't know if he was watching Phil Bennett back in the day. You should get onto YouTube and have a look at a few of those teams. They were half decent. I think on paper England should be winning this. However, someone sent me a stat that 39, 49, 59, 69, 79, 89, 99, 2009, Wales have won.
Wow.
So there's quite a sequence. So 2019, would you bet against it? Probably not, because they are a different beast in Cardiff. Very tough. They love this game, like everybody else playing England, but they're particularly passionate about it. And they'd love to rub Austin Healey's nose in it.
What did Healy say?
He's just
being Austin Healy.
Very always anti-Wales. So they love to hate him more than anyone else.
This Wales team aren't stupid. I mean, okay, maybe they're normal Welsh people. I don't know. The bit where Eddie Jones is saying you're the greatest team of all time, they know they're not.
No, they know. So it's a bit patronising, isn't it? Yeah, they know they're not. They know he's not plumosing them. They know. It's said with a little snigger of some sort, because this is not the best Welsh team. It's a really good Welsh team, very strong, but their results. Is it 12 in a row that they're looking for this weekend, which would be a record for them? So that, from a results perspective, it has to appear as though it's a very good Welsh team, but the best ever, I don't know, I think they're competing with Grand Slam teams and teams full of Lions and sides that have been consistently excellent. So I don't think they're that side yet. If they go on and get to a World Cup final, I think they have the scope of getting into a conversation about that. But definitely on paper, it looks as though England have more firepower, particularly with the likes of Faletau out injured. I think he brings so much to them. I think it'll be a very, very tight game. I'm gonna go for England shading it, but I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, In terms of the Scotland-France game, the France-Scotland game, more accurately, France is such a rabble at the minute. It's hard to see what's going to happen there. Like, pre-tournament, we were like, there's no way they're going to sack another coach before the World Cup. Now you're like, what would they actually lose if they sacked this coach now? Like, what difference would it make?
Well, you look at what happened with the World Cup in 2011. They all but told Lieberman that they were owning the team themselves. And it was Yashvili, I think, kind of took the bull by the horns and said, you know, and Dusatwar, and they got to within 1 point of the host nation. And of winning, and one referee decision from winning a World Cup themselves. So, like, there's so much natural ability there. It's so frustrating. I think the world over is frustrated at how that's not being harnessed. And now he's gone for, you know, another reaction of, you know, Dupont had to start. He had a really great 20 minutes when he came on against England. But now he's going with Ntamack at 10, as opposed to having played him at 12 in his first test, and then benched him for the second one, then brought him on at 10. So at least there's an excitement to that. But there's, yeah, he seems to be jumping from Peter to Paul with personnel, you know, knee-jerk reactions depending on what the result is.
Yeah, so, 5 months out from picking your World Cup squad.
Yeah, but I agree. I don't know what you would necessarily lose if you were to bring someone else in on a short-term contract. You know, you might get the Solskjaer feel-good factor.
Maybe,
if
yeah.
bringing someone in that's... I don't know what the feeling is with the players, but on the basis of how they're playing and the performances and their results, you'd have to imagine all's not well in camp.
Tell us what you make of Scotland now after our performance in a couple of weeks on against them. Like, this was a team when the draw was made that we were a little bit concerned about, that, like, actually they seem to be coming, they have a coach and a style of play, and Providence is playing the same style of play, and they've got the system sorted, and we'll be so heavy favourites against them in Japan that, like, there's that risk of being... And then... The game 2 weeks ago, it just felt like they weren't so they were in a little bit, but not really, and that's their home games. That, I don't know, they seem a little bit further back than we had guessed they were.
Yeah, and they're going to be tested even more now. No Russell, you know, Nick Grigg has come into the centre, and they've a couple of back row issues. Obviously, Hamish Watson's been gone for the tournament. Peter Horn starting at 10, who's an exciting player, but would you be frightened playing against him internationally? I don't think so. I think he's a very nice club player and a good bench player, but, you know, starting 10, so no Stuart Hogg. It looks like a very different Scotland team.
They're much thinner maybe than we had
anticipated. A lot thinner. And this will work for Gregor Townsend. He'll see glass half full, because it's an opportunity for him to develop his squad under circumstances that are out of his control. It's not a selection issue. These have been enforced changes. But, you know, with Hugh Jones gone as well, there's just a lot of firepower gone. The bit of muscle in the pack as well. I don't know if WP Nell is back. I don't think he is for his scrummaging. He's been really good this season. So I just think... with it being in France and needing a reaction, I think Scotland will really have their work cut out.
Yeah, that has the potential to be a bit of a wild game, that, like, both teams just play a bit of heads-up stuff as opposed to one of those slogfests that we see.
Yeah. Well, certainly, I think that'll be dictated by the halfbacks. And Peter Horn is that sort of player. He's an exciting player. I like watching him. And he's a thinking man's player. So he'll, if there's opportunities to be had in the French defence, you know, he'll probably work them out. I don't know much about his kicking game. It's all right, but likewise in Ntamack, you know, he wants to run it. So when you have two tens that want to play that way, that tends to be how the team, direction the team goes, which, you know, should make for good viewing.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Brian. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Cheers.
That is Friday Night Rugby. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.